everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk Chicago's 18th podcast. My name's John Zagluel, owner and operator of the site. We have a lot to get to today, including a very special guest, but first, just a few quick announcements. Make sure to follow us at Chi Talk Sports on Twitter, and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram, all at John Zags. Also, if you're looking for a gift shop or something convenient down the road near you, make sure to check out Moochie World, a peculiar place at the Tinley Park Down Shopping Center. Its address is 7913 171st Street in Tinley Park. You can contact them by calling 773-796-8224. Again, that's 773-796-8224. We're going to start off today's podcast talking about the Chicago Cubs, and again, what a year it has been for them, really controlling the NL Central Division lead. They're up by 12.5 games, and they own the MLB's best record at 74-43. Now, there's been a lot of accomplishments on the field for the Cubs. One problem, though, is the injury of Pedro Strop, who tore a meniscus. He'll be out 4 to 6 weeks, and as we saw the other day, versus the Cardinals, without Strope and without Hector Rondon, a healthy Hector Rondon, that is, the Cubs have serious weaknesses in their bullpen. We saw Carl Edwards Jr., who has usually been great this year, just struggle with his command. He had a bad outing, giving up, I believe it was 4 walks, and a lot of runs scored because Joe Smith came in and gave up a grand slam. And on another remarkable note, since Smith has come to the Cubs, he's posted an ERA way over 8, also has given up 3 critical home runs. So again, the bullpen right now is obviously working out some kinks, and with injuries to your 2 best setup guys, to your 2 main guys that you put in the 7th and 8th inning, of course it's going to hurt, and of course it's not going to be smooth sailing. And in my opinion, another player who really needs to pick up the pace and keep up is Mike Montgomery himself. And again, he's pitched to the tune of a 4.05 ERA, 6.2 innings pitched, 3 earned runs. Now, he's done okay. He hasn't done great, but he hasn't done bad. He's done right about in the middle. The only problem I have with that is the Cubs gave up a little too much, in my opinion, for him. They gave up Dan Vogelbach, a first baseman, and I understand they have Rizzo at the major league level. They don't need another first baseman. But Vogelbach was a good, pure hitter. At one point, the guy was ranked, actually, in the top 10 as far as the Cubs minor league system prospect list. So this guy was a good player who has a lot of upside. Now the Mariners are in control of him, and all the Cubs got back was a measly run-of-the-mill relief pitcher in exchange for a top prospect. I don't think that's a fair deal at all. So I think Montgomery really has a chance to step it up, has a chance to get an increased workload and get a bigger presence in the bullpen, but he has to work for it. And the same thing is for Joe Smith, who I think has done just a horrendous job since coming on board with the team. One person who has done a good job since his recall from AAA is Justin Grimm. And keep in mind about Grimm last season. I mean, he pitched to an ERA under 3, was one of the Cubs' premier setup men, wasn't having the same success this year. When he got demoted, I think reality hit him, and ever since he's come back up strong. So again, a chance for him to step up, especially while Strope is on the DL, and Rondon is still trying to get better, still, again, on the mend from some sore triceps. Another news story that people and the media have been following a lot is the absence of Tommy La Stella, and how once he got demoted to AAA Iowa, he did not choose to report to the team, which was big news, and he ended up speaking out about it to ESPN's Jesse Rogers a little bit later, about a week after he got demoted, and he has said repeatedly that he wants to be on the Major League team and doesn't think he deserves to be demoted. And to be quite honest with you, I 100% agree with Tommy La Stella. Now, I don't think he's going about it the right way, because I think if he just decided to suck it up and report to Iowa, he could have already been back at the major league level by this point. But again, considering that this guy, and let's compare him first of all to Chris Coughlin, who is technically his replacement at the big league level. The only reason he wasn't demoted is because there's not an option in his contract to get demoted. So Coughlin, so far with the Cubs, is hitting just over 200. On the year, he's still hitting under 200. Meanwhile, Tommy La Stella, in increased time, has a batting average of 295, an on-base of 388, and a slugging percentage of 457. That makes his OPS just under 850. Granted, it's only in 122 plate appearances, but still, that is some great production from a pinch hitter, from a guy who comes into games cold off the bench and has to deliver, and he does most of the time. Also, one thing I really like about La Stella is that the guy doesn't strike out. He's a force to be reckoned with at the plate, and pulling up his stats here, he only has 69 career strikeouts and 557 plate appearances. That's simply amazing. You don't see stuff like that anymore. These types of batters who always make contact no matter what the situation, you're seeing strikeout numbers trend in an upward direction. But as far as La Stella goes, he's finding a way to make it work. So do I think that someone like that should be demoted to the minor league, should be banished to the dungeons of Major League Baseball? No, I do not. And I feel for him. But as I mentioned before, I don't think it's right what he's doing. He's trying to take a stand against management and against Joe Maddon, but that's not the right way to approach this situation. If La Stella simply reported when he was asked to, he would have gotten more at-bats and been able to stay fresh in the minors, and he would have been recalled within days, probably within the week. And that's exactly what has happened to Justin Grimm, a prime example of a veteran who was sent down to AAA. You know what? He didn't take it in anger. He didn't act disgusted. He took his assignment. He did great in his one inning that he pitched at AAA and was immediately called right back up. That's the way baseball is going. It's a business. And I think Tommy La Stella has to realize that to be a successful player on and off the field. La Stella has got to realize that this decision was not made to punish him. It was made because of a business-related decision due to contracts. La Stella should really report to Iowa, and I truly believe that he will eventually, because if he wants any chance at being a part of the team during its run in September and hopefully in October, he has to be back on the team via a recall from AAA Iowa. La Stella has made it to the major leagues on his hustle and his grit and his toughness. And he has to show it off right now if he wants any chance at being on the Cubs playoff roster as they head in to October. Now we'll move on to the South side and talk about the Chicago White Sox for a moment. Currently, they are 56-61, 11.5 games back of the AL Central leading Cleveland Indians. And in my opinion, I see two major problems with the White Sox. Number one, they do not have a definitive back of the rotation. And number two is the fact that their bullpen has not been performing well as of late. And I want to redirect that conversation right away to Mr. David Robertson, whom the White Sox signed for a mega deal in the 2014 offseason heading into 2015. Now, Robertson last season posted a modest, if not a little bit of a high, 3.41 ERA as a closer. And he also blew 7 saves. And now this year, looking at his save-to-save opportunity ratio, he has also blown already 6 saves, almost matching last year's total. This is a guy who the Sox paid top dollars for, a guy who's making over $10 million a year to simply close games for the White Sox, and he cannot shut the door, at least according to these alarming statistics. Let's compare him to Hector Rondon, the closer for the Cubs. Now, Rondon last year only blew 4 saves, had an ERA under 2, and was making just above the league minimum. This year, he's still making a modest $5.2 million, but still has an ERA under 3, and again, is doing a great job for the team. So, David Robertson seems like a waste of money at this point. He still has one more year left on his mega contract, so let's hope he can find his way and get back to his old ways as he was with the Yankees. Now, another big problem for the Sox is their starting rotation. As we all know, the Sox have struggled all season to possess a consistent fifth starter. As we remember, at the start of the year, it was Matt Latos who was doing great through the first month, through his first 4 starts, but then the wheels fell off of the wagon, and all of a sudden reality set in, and Latos was released. We had Miguel Gonzalez a little bit later, who did okay, but unfortunately fell victim to the injury bug. And now currently, you have Jacob Turner, a former Cub pitcher, who is now thrown for the Sox, a former top prospect, I should add, yet he has done nothing well for the Sox thus far, pitching to an ERA much over 9.00. So again, problems for the Sox, and we have to go back to where it all started. Although Chris Sale and Jose Quintana have been doing well, it all goes back to James Shields, whom the Sox acquired way back in June. And again, statistics since his acquisition have been atrocious, I'm sorry to say. I mean, we all remember in his first start, he only lasted 2 innings, giving up 7 runs. He's had 6 quality starts, and he had a string of good starts. Actually, the entire month of July treated him very well, and it looked like we were going to see vintage James Shields. But since the start of August, he has pitched 5 innings, 1.1, and 3 innings. That's in 3 separate starts, giving up 6, 8, and 7 earned runs. And again, having James Shields as your number 3 starter would have been an insult a couple of years ago. I mean, there was a time where James Shields was one of the best pitchers in the American League. I mean, 1 year, went 16-10, ERA under 3, and led the league with 11 complete games, which is something that has not been done in a long time, pitching double-digit complete games in one season. But as of right now, it seems as if his age and the fact that he's thrown a lot of innings in the past is starting to catch up to him, because his performance all season, including with the San Diego Padres, has not been James Shields-like and has been equivalent, to be honest with you, of a minor league pitcher. Now, offensively, there has been some bright spots for the Sox. Melky Cabrera is currently hitting .298, just under .300, which is a great average and is quite an improvement on last year's .273 mark. And another bright spot, and you have to applaud Rick Hahn and company for making this signing, Justin Morneau, former 2006 AL MVP, is on the Sox and has been doing a great job in limited time in only 24 games, hitting just under .300, and that's a great job again, considering that he missed much of 2015 and much of this year due to an elbow injury. He had elbow surgery back in December, and he's able to prove that he can still compete and contribute to a team at the major league level. And with that, it's time to move on to the gridiron as we talk Chicago Bears football. And in their first preseason game, unfortunately, they suffered a 22-0 loss against the Denver Broncos. Now, looking at the stats from that first game, now, the quarterbacks did really well. Jay Cutler, 3 of 4, Fales, 4 of 8, Hoyer, 7 of 10, and Connor Shaw, 2 for 4. But a real horrible trend you saw in that game was the fact that there was no running game for the Bears. I mean, Kadeem Carey, 3 attempts, 8 yards, and talking about everybody, Langford, Perry, Rogers, and even Howard, they all averaged less than 3 yards a carry. The only person who averaged more was Connor Shaw, who scrambled for 14 yards on 2 attempts to have an average of 7 yards per carry. So, again, problems with the running game there, and, you know, I wrote an article about a couple of weeks ago regarding Jeremy Langford and how it is his time to shine. It is an open race to get that starting spot for Game 1, and Langford is the favorite because he started last year when Forte was hurt and did such a great job. And then you see him in this first preseason game, 4 attempts, 7 yards, you have to start to wonder. So I hope Langford picks it up because, again, it is Jeremy Langford's time to shine. Regarding the game itself, it seemed that the offense really couldn't get anything going, and right away off the bat, Demaryius Thomas had a 32-yard touchdown pass for Mark Sanchez. Then you see, I mean, a punt formation, the Bears had to punt. They get an interception by Freeman. They ended up punting. They didn't score anything. They had to punt again. I mean, you're seeing this recurring theme here where the Bears just couldn't get anything started on offense. And it wasn't that the Broncos really killed them. I mean, they chipped away with 7 points in the first, 13 in the second, only 2 in the third, nothing in the fourth. So, again, the Broncos chipped away at the Bears' offense, and it really, in my opinion, deflated. I mean, you see a over 30-yard touchdown pass to Demaryius Thomas to start the game. That's not the right way you want to start. And then the Bears, they're trying to answer with their own touchdown, with their own field goal, something, and they're unable to produce. And for the rest of the game, the offense was never on track. So, something to think about for these next couple of games. Get the offense on track. Start running the ball a little more and hopefully have Jeremy Langford, Kadeem Carey, Jaquizz Rodgers, and others start carrying the ball for a bigger gain. And as far as defensively, don't let up on coverage down the field. I mean, we saw that mistake early on, again with that Demaryius Thomas touchdown pass. And finally, a programming note. If you want to watch the Bears again for the preseason, their second game will be tomorrow night against the New England Patriots at 7 o'clock p.m. Make sure to check it out. Now on to some Chicago Blackhawks news before we get to our special guest of the day. And some big news off the bat. Brian Campbell, the veteran defenseman who was on the team in 2010 when they won the Stanley Cup, is back with the team on a one-year deal. This is a quote from Campbell, quote, "It's where I wanted to be. It's where my heart was. It just makes our lives perfect. We're so ecstatic." And last season, even though he was 36, he still led all NHL defensemen with a plus 31 in the plus-minus rating. He also had 6 goals and 25 assists in all 82 games. So this guy is still an athlete. He's still playing well at the ripe old age of 37. And let's hope he can contribute to another Stanley Cup as he did 6 years ago. In some more news, as far as free agent signings go, the Hawks have signed Michael Roosevelt and forward Brandon Machinter to one-year contracts. If you remember, Roosevelt last year had a goal and 12 assists, his fourth with the Hawks, 15th in the NHL, while Machinter had 4 goals and an assist in his first year with the team last year. And finally, just some scheduling notes. The Hawks have their first preseason game on Wednesday, September 28th, against Pittsburgh. They will have 5 more games after that, and their first regular season game will be on the 12th versus the St. Louis Blues. So now we're going to move on and talk about the Chicago Bulls, which is an area of expertise for our special guest coming up in a moment. So let's talk about the team for a minute. Again, we know that Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo are on the team. Another minor signing is the acquisition of Isaiah Kanan, who recently came over from the Philadelphia 76ers, and all these acquisitions and transactions offset the loss of Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah. In fact, they improve upon it. But one legitimate question remains. Although the Bulls look good on paper this year, how will they truly perform? Well, to answer this question and many others, I have a special guest on today. He used to play for the Bulls himself and was a 2-time All-Star with the Utah Jazz. Currently, he's going to be playing in China this year, along fellow former NBA players Donald Sloan and Yi Jianlian. Please welcome Carlos Boozer, a.k.a. Booz Cruz, to the show. Hello, everybody. Again, we are back here today with Carlos Boozer, live by phone. Carlos, thank you for being on the show, and how you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, no problem. So, first of all, I'd like to reflect on your career, specifically as a member of the Bulls. Now, in your first 2 seasons you were with Chicago, you guys put up some of the best regular season records in franchise history. How did you feel about that team, and how do you think your presence helped solidify the team's performance?
Oh, man, I love being in Chicago, man. It was a great move for me coming from Utah, teaming up with Derrick Rose and Joakim. They were the big reasons why I came there. And then once I got there, I realized how good the rest of the guys were. You know, we had Lou Alcang, Taj Gibson, and a host of other guys that really helped us out, especially with Coach Tibbs being his first year in Chicago, being the head coach. But it was so much fun, man. We had a great roster from head to from top to bottom, guys that could compete and play. You know, we thought we had a real chance to win the championship. And it was tough, you know, it was tough keeping Derek. With Derek getting hurt, it kind of relinquished our, you know, our chances of winning. But I'm telling you, man, that team was one of my favorite teams to play on.
Now, I want to talk to you about last season. You sat out last year. So what convinced you to come back to the court to play in China along former NBA players Donald Sloan and Li Jianlian?
Yeah, I took a year off, you know. I got a chance to spend some time with my kids and travel a little bit, spend some time with my family. You know, I had a tough year with the Lakers, you know, young group of guys, and I'm not used to losing like that. I've won most of my career, so it was kind of a tough year, but I did a good thing by taking some time off, let my body recover, and now my body feels great, and I'm looking forward to going to China. A great opportunity out there to play and open myself up to a new experience, and then I'll be back in maybe February and come back to the NBA.
Awesome. That's great to hear. So, as you know now, the 2016 Olympics in Rio are currently going on, and the USA basketball team is boasting a 5-0 record at this point. You were fortunate enough to play on the team in 2004 and 2008, so is there a different atmosphere in Olympic basketball? And also, what were your thoughts after taking home the gold medal in 2008?
Yeah, it's an amazing honor, man. You know, let me just say that first and foremost. Anytime you get a chance to put that USA jersey on, get a chance to represent your country, doing the sport that you love is an amazing honor. And we took that, you know, we took that pride with us over to Beijing. And for us, you know, we were trying to redeem ourselves because in 2004, you know, we didn't get a chance to play a lot. You know, it was a team that was driven by AI and Stephon Marbury and Tim Duncan. And we were like the young gunners. It was myself and Amari. I think we had, D Wade. We had Melo and LeBron. We were all really young. We didn't play that much in 2004, so we really didn't have that much of a hand on what we did. But in 2008, we had a chance to redeem ourselves. And, we went out there and we kicked butt, man. We had Silver, the best players on the planet. We went out there on a mission every night. We put our egos to the side and just, you know, do what we had to win the gold medal. And then when you get the gold medal and they play your national anthem in front of everybody, and we're in China, so it's billions of people watching, just a huge honor.
Now, unfortunately, going back to your NBA career here, unfortunately you suffered some multiple injuries in your career, including a serious one that allowed you to play only 37 games in the 08-09 season. Now, questions were swirling. Many wondered about your ability to stay healthy. How did this situation fuel you to come back stronger the next season, proving that you still had a lot left in the tank?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's basketball. I mean, as an athlete, you know how we are. We push our bodies to the limits to see, you know, how best shape we can be in, how good we can really perform. We challenge our bodies. And, you know, every athlete that does that is going to come across some injuries. So I've had a couple, you know. Not too many, but I had a couple of injuries throughout my career trying to test my body out. But the great thing about it was, you know, my body responded terrifically to all the treatment, came back and had great, great, great years in the NBA, you know, a 13-year career, two-time All-Star, two-time Olympian, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So I was very fortunate that my body was able to come back and respond to all the good treatment after having a couple of tough injuries. But that's part of sports. You know, when you're an athlete and you're testing yourself out and you're challenging yourself to reach a different level, a performance, you're going to sometimes, you know, push it too far and get a little banged up. So,
okay, so now let's move on. Talk about the current Bulls team for a moment. Now, last year the team, they missed the playoffs for the first time in 8 years. Management, though, went out this year. They made a big splash. They signed Dwayne Wade, Rajon Rondo, two big names in the NBA. So do you think these moves will make the Bulls a contender? And what is their key to success for this upcoming season?
A contender? No. I don't think they'll be good enough to beat Cleveland. I think there's a couple other teams that are a little bit better. I mean, even the Knicks. I think the Knicks are better. And the Bulls will be this year. But, I mean, you know, trading Derek, I'm sure it had to be very tough for the Bulls to make that decision. Obviously he's extremely motivated after, you know, having his hometown team move him to the Knicks. I saw a couple of interviews that he's done. And Joakim went over there. Joakim is a super underrated star. And you know, being a Bulls fan, how much appreciation you must have for him. As a teammate of his and one of my best friends, Joakim has so much basketball left in his body. He plays with so much passion. He gives everything he has every night, just like Derek does. So, you know, those two guys linking up with Carmelo and linking up with, the young kid Porzingis are going to make them a potent team. But the Bulls, you know, signing Dwayne Wade, coming back home, that's a good move. You know, D-Wade has a lot left in the tank as well. Had a great year in Miami last year. I know it's a 2-year deal, but he can opt out after next year, so I don't know how long he'll be in Chicago. I know Rondo deal was a 1-year deal, and obviously they got Jimmy locked up for a couple years. So they'll be good. I think they have the talent to make the playoffs in the East. I don't know if they'll be a contender. I wouldn't say that. I have to see how they mesh together a little bit. You know, Rondo needs the ball a lot. You know, D-Wade needs the ball a lot too, so we'll see how that pans out for them. But for the most part, I think they have the kind of roster that could be in the playoffs next year.
Now, you mentioned Derrick Rose, and since you were teammates with him, I just wanted to talk to you about him for a minute. I mean, do you believe that Derrick Rose deserved the amount of scrutiny over his injuries and his performance? And as you mentioned before, but I want to hear you talk about it again, do you believe that he has something left to give with New York?
Oh my goodness. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. Like, D. Rose is one of the most hardworking players that I was able to play with, in Chicago. He's super humble. He's one of those guys that doesn't talk a lot, very quiet, especially to the media. And he got scrutinized because, you know, like I told you, when you push your body to the limit, sometimes you go through things. And, you know, sometimes your body's going to respond differently. And he can't control. He didn't want to get hurt. Trust me. You know, D-Rose wanted to play, but you can't control something. Like, if you saw the one where we were in the playoff and he just jumped and passed me the ball and he tore his ACL and his MCL, it was a routine jump for him. It just, something freakishly happened in his knee. You know, nothing you can do about that. And, you know, I personally think that, you know, anytime that you are the franchise guy, you're under a microscope. You know, I've done that before in Utah. I was even that way in Chicago at times, even though it was D-Rose's team. But I'm telling you, D-Rose wanted to be out there on the court with us every night. And then sometimes his body would break down and wouldn't let him be out there, you know. But I think last year he played, I don't remember how many games he played, but it was one of the most he had in his career in a couple of years. He's healthy. He had to change his game, you know, a little bit. You know, obviously his athleticism isn't the same, but he's still extremely smart, still one of the top 10 to 15 point guards in the game for sure. And Sippy, and in his motion, he's better than that. So stay tuned. I think D-Rose had a lot to prove. He got a huge chip on his shoulder now after being traded from his hometown of Chicago. And I tell you what, man, if I wasn't in China, I'd be at that game when he comes back to United Center. I'll tell you that.
All right. Talking about your career for a minute, can you describe your path to the NBA? As we know, it was quite different than some other players. You grew up in Alaska. You had to go through the climate and make it all the way through the NBA, through Duke and all that. Just go through your career before the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, from Washington, D.C., and then when I was 8, 9 years old, I moved to Alaska and stayed there while I was in high school. I was very fortunate to, you know, get coached by my father and my dad most of my life. And when I got to high school, I got to be coached by George Houston, who was a very, very successful coach up in Alaska. And we won a couple of state championships and was player of the year 2 or 3 times. And just great time up there. I was very fortunate to be named to the McDonald's All-American game my senior year of high school and the Magic game. So very highly decorated in high school and very fortunate to be so because I was in Alaska. It wasn't like I was in Chicago or New York or D.C. or, you know, California. I was up in Alaska and I still got a lot of notoriety, so it was good. I was very fortunate to be recruited by just about everybody in the country. And I was really impressed by Coach K and the Coach K staff down there at Duke and went down to Duke and had a great, great career. You know, we won the championship in 01 and went to a couple of Sweet 16s as well. And then got drafted by Cleveland, second round. The year I got drafted was Yao Ming's draft, and they were bringing a lot of European guys in from overseas. And I guess there's a lot of question marks about how good I would be at that next level. And I had to, you know, I came into the NBA with a huge chip on my shoulder trying to prove myself, which I kind of like. I like being the underdog. And, you know, 13 years later and a whole lot of success later, hopefully I've been able to prove them wrong.
And now, with you on the show, I just have to ask you about your nickname given you by Stacey King in 2013. I'll refresh your memory here. After you posterized Bismack Biyombo, King cried out, "Get on the booze cruise." Did the name stick, and what were your thoughts on it?
Hey, man, big shout out to Stacey King, man. Great, great, great commentator. Has having a great career after his basketball career. So, yeah, I mean, it was just one of those plays where I, you know, came down the lane and jump with Biyombo. He was a young fella at the time, and I caught him slipping that night, and that booze cruise stuck with me, man. After that, Big Stace was always saying, "Get on the booze cruise." So, great, great, great commentator right there, man.
And just one final question. You mentioned you're going to be playing in China this year, but you said you could be coming back to the NBA in February. Do you have a team in mind? Mm-hmm. Would you have a reunion possibly with the Bulls?
Yeah, I'm definitely open to it. You know, I really love Chicago, man. I'm going back in a couple of weeks. I'm going to visit a couple of friends, and a couple of my friends are getting married, so I'll be back in the Chi for about a week. But yeah, I'm open to a lot of teams, you know. I definitely would like to come back and win a championship and have a chance to go out with a ring, and keep playing a little bit. I probably got about 2 or 3 years left in these old bones of mine, but, I'm definitely open to coming back to Chicago. Absolutely.
Well, great to hear. Carlos, again, thank you for being on the show, everybody. Carlos Boozer, and again, really appreciate you taking time out of your day to be on the show.
Hey, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem. So again, a great show, another great shout out to Carlos Boozer. Really appreciate him taking time out of his day to be on the show. And with that, we'll get to our closing segments, starting with the weird sports story of the day. And yes, it relates to the 2016 Olympics in Rio. So according to the Huffington Post Online, here are 11 weird sports that were actually in the Olympics. I'm going to read them off to you. So live pigeon shooting, a swimming obstacle course, tug of war, a long jump for horses, a high jump for horses, a plunge for distance, croquet, rope climbing, tandem bicycle sprint, standing high jump, and underwater swimming. So there are your 11 weird sports that used to be in the Olympics. That is your odd sports story of the day. And now we're going to move on to our punchline of the day segment. And this will be a funny baseball joke. So here's the question. What do you get when you cross a tree with a baseball player? The answer, Babe Root. So again, as corny and as cheesy as that was, that is your punchline of the day segment. And now we're going to move on finally to our announcer's call of the day segment. I'm going to set the mood for you folks here. As we know, a lot of history has happened in these past couple of weeks as far as baseball goes. Ichiro Suzuki was able to get his 3,000th hit. It was a triple at Coors Field facing the Colorado Rockies in Colorado. So here we have multiple calls from Miami Marlins announcers depicting Ichiro's moment with history.
Now against Russell, he's one hit away. Ichiro to right and deep. Back goes Parra to the wall, and it's off the wall! 3,000 is in right field, and Ichiro is racing for third! And he's done it! He's climbed the mountain! A triple!
Baseball history made today.
Number 3,000 for the one, the only, the remarkable Ichiro.
And again, what a remarkable moment for Ichiro. I mean, he didn't even start playing here in the U.S. until his later 20s and was still able to get his 3,000th hit at the ripe old age of 42 years old. Congrats to Ichiro Suzuki. Well, that's it for us here at SportsTalkChicago.com. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ShyTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, Instagram, and LinkedIn at John Zags. And one more note again. Thank you to Carlos Boozer for agreeing to appear on the show. Again, some great stuff with him. And watch out, as he mentioned himself, we could be seeing an NBA comeback, a possible Chicago Bulls comeback, coming in February of 2017. Thank you all for listening. I really appreciate it. And have a great day.